trigger has been pulled on YouTube and now on Facebook. We give it a couple of seconds. So it tells me that we are live.
Okay.
And Facebook confirms that we are live. And so I want to welcome everyone and apologize at the same time. I apologize because I know some of my audience, local audience from Odmira region, don't like English episodes of this podcast. I still haven't sorted out the subtitling things efficiently. I would prefer automatic because it's impossible otherwise. But nevertheless, welcome everyone who might be watching, everyone who will be listening and watching in the future. And with me today, on the subject of immigration, I have Gintare. Is that well pronounced?
Yes, it's Gintare. Hello, everybody. Hello, good evening.
Hello, and welcome to my podcast. Thank you very much for accepting the invitation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really a big pleasure to be here tonight and to say hello to all the people in Odmira. And again, I apologize as well for not speaking in Portuguese this time, but it will be in English.
Yes, and we at some point I will maybe one day earn the lottery and pay someone to subtitle if correctly all my broadcasts in English.
I could speak in Portuguese, but it wouldn't be very efficient, and so it's better in English.
Could be
this
lost
time
in translation.
It could be very much lost in translation, so it's better that way.
The subject that brings us here today, it's immigration. It's actually on the top of the day in people's lives and minds here in this region. It's a relatively recent phenomenon, and it's been causing some unrest and some worrying in a local population. But as you know, the stance of this podcast, we are very pro people and pro integration. And we try to deflect all the hate speech and all speech that might induce hate or bad feelings towards other people. And so, stick with us. And I'm sure it will be a very interesting conversation.
That is the goal.
Gintare,
yes.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. You are an immigrant yourself, right?
Yes, I am an immigrant. So I'm originally from Lithuania. And I left Lithuania now already 13 years ago. So I was immigrant in Italy for 3 years. And now I'm immigrant to UK, Northern Ireland, to be precise. So I think, yes, immigration specifically, you know, it touches my daily life because I am an immigrant, right? So I think I can see the issue from different angles, being immigrant myself. And also, as I said, I'm Lithuanian. And Lithuania at the moment as well have a little bit of, I couldn't call it an issue, but maybe an increased number of migrants in Lithuania. So I can hear as well local people talking about that. And I think that is another point where I can reflect and maybe even sympathize, you know, with local people here. And also, I think the biggest merit that I have maybe to talk about this issue is the one that while living in United Kingdom in Northern Ireland, I worked in migrant projects. So an organization called STEP, which is Sound Tyrone Empowerment Program. And that's essentially is a program, an organization that was created to help migrants in the region. So all the newcomers in the region. So I worked with different integration programs there with the housing issues, particularly was my area of expertise.
Yes, and housing is actually one of the biggest issues here.
It is everywhere, you know. I would like to say that it's big issue everywhere, especially where immigration is a, you know, it's a bigger influx of the migrants. The housing, one of the biggest always issues, because I think when the immigration starts, isn't it, countries are not very well prepared. We're not sort of getting announcement to say that from this day or this year, you know, we're getting a lot of guests. So I think that is sort of goes everywhere we would look at.
But in how was it in your case when you yourself became a migrant? How did you, what was the, can you shortly, briefly describe the reality that you found? How did you feel well received? Was it easy?
Okay. So my maybe story is a little bit different than a lot of people. I don't know why exactly. Maybe because I spoke very well English when I came to Northern Ireland. I also have friends in Northern Ireland. So when I came to Northern Ireland, I came to my friend's house. And before coming even to Northern Ireland, I already was able to secure a couple of job interviews. And the fun fact is that I, straight from the airport, I went to the job interview even before going home to put the suitcase, right?
Okay.
So it made it everything a little bit easier for me because I secured the job immediately and I sorted a lot of, started sort of the process of getting my national insurance number in UK case while I was still in Italy. So it was actually easy for me. I started to receive probably a couple first payments and I started to look for the housing myself. Mm-hmm. And yes, I was able to rent a house at that time. I don't know. It probably was that area where I was looking for the housing wasn't mm-hmm. so much populated. So I was lucky. I think I lived with my friend about 2 months and then I moved out to live by myself.
I suppose that being an European, you didn't feel that culture shock that much?
No, definitely not. It was a lot easier. But I think, yes, language was a big factor here why I was so lucky, I think. But during my work with the program for the migrants, I seen that the biggest issue for people to getting housing is basically the language. A lot of people come in without the language and then to get the housing is very, very hard. It's basically can be nearly impossible because, you know, how you're going to talk with local landlords, you know, and how you're going to explain the mm-hmm. situation. You always need to ask somebody, you always need to have a friend who could talk for you. So I think language is always one of the biggest factors, of course. And then, of course, that the landlords are, they're not prepared, you know, to sit there with the Google Translator very much, you know, and they prioritize people who can come and talk straight away with them and to agree everything. I think that's very human factor.
And so when did it become part of your life to be working with migrants?
Right. So probably, I would say 5 years into living in Northern Ireland. Essentially, it was as well very big luck, probably, or I don't know. But one time I seen on Facebook an organization in Northern Ireland called Housing Rights. They were looking for sort of to create a pool of multilingual, multicultural people and train them in interpreting and also in housing rights and create sort of like a housing clinics and to deliver those housing clinics around Northern Ireland to make sure that people from different languages, from different backgrounds could come and get the housing advice in their native language. Mm-hmm. So that would be a lot easier than, you know, waiting while everybody will learn English. And while they would wait, you know, to be abused and their rights denied and everything. So they trained quite a few people. I was studying with Arabic-speaking people, mm-hmm. Romanian-speaking people. We had people from Lithuania. We had people from Bulgaria. You know, I think it was 12 or 13 of us who we were well-trained. Mm-hmm. And then we were delivering those clinics, free clinics, advice clinics around Northern Ireland. And we were given the advice. For example, I would give to Lithuanians in Lithuanian language, explaining their rights, what they need to do if they can't secure a housing or things like that. Other people were doing the same in their native language. And then I sort of got a volunteering placement in the organization that later I've become a rightful worker there.
Okay, but and who funds this organization?
Government. That is all was funded by the government projects. And right. As well, partially, it was funded from Northern Ireland Housing Executive. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what would be equivalent in Portugal, but that's basically a governmental body that looks after all the social housing.
But is it like, okay, but the, is it like an organization that belongs, you know, the third sector?
No.
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 So it's really government bound.
It is government bound. It's sort of created to look after initially it sort of was called to look after homelessness in UK, in Northern Ireland. So their premier objective was to eliminate homelessness, right? But that elimination is like a process. You can't really never eliminate, you know, it's it's not eliminated at this day in UK.
And it's dynamic, it changes.
It changes all the time. And I think actually it increases every year, you know, and it's very hard for government as well to keep up with that, to keep building new houses and buy houses from the, you know, private landlord and to convert them in into the social housing. So that is, yeah, one of those issues, you know, that is never ending. It's
And that's actually what they did. They bought houses. Did they build new houses or just buy?
Yes, they built new houses. They bought old houses. So that's a lot. It's like being a really, really big construction sites, you know, now at the moment where they buy a lot of land and they build a lot of houses. Mm-hmm. And they basically, people are allocated to those houses together.
That's a very interesting example because that's actually what, in my opinion, we need here. We need real housing policy. I'm very critic of this because we haven't had a decent housing policy in decades. And this is actually the core of the is at the center of many problems that arise here in society. But tell me, still, I am focusing on your experience in Northern Ireland, but then I want us to transport this into this reality because you are married to a local person.
I am, luckily.
And so you are also you are already and also connected to the to this land to and you come here now often and
It's been 10 last years that I come regularly, so I've seen a little bit of the changes as well, like even as an outsider, but you know,
as an outsider, and we'll go there. But but first of all, when you worked with migrants and you've mentioned many nationalities, how about social backgrounds? Because apart from culture and country of origin, you have many, for example, financial backgrounds, people that come from average families, not that poor, people that are in extreme conditions and are a little bit in desperation, people that run from wars, for example.
Yes.
Was this a diverse reality, or it was just mainly like European and from the outskirts, let's call it this, of Europe?
No, definitely not. We had a lot of different migrants with a lot of different backgrounds, obviously. Being support organization, obviously, all the professional migrants, so let's say engineers who come to work or doctors, they never needed our support, right? Because they come in already in very comfortable situation, right? But it would be mostly, I would say really mostly, you know, I don't have exact statistics, but I would say 90% of people who genuinely come to work and they genuinely look for a better life. And they come to work and they have language barriers. They have many times maybe there would be an issue with the childcare. So, for example, families coming with the children and they find it a bit more difficult to find work, to secure work, to maintain work because, for example, they don't have a childcare. And as a result of that, obviously, it becomes a lot harder to sustain the tenancy, you know, to find home and to sustain paying for that house, for example. So as well, our organization sort of would come to help with that, you know, and help all different issues. But the housing, you know, is the main, I think, is the main issue for everybody. You know, it's a main thing that every single person needs. Whoever comes, you cannot create and sustain a job, however good you are, if you don't have nowhere to live, right? If you don't have nowhere to rest. You cannot integrate as well if you're sleeping on the streets. So housing is the main...
Or in overcrowded houses.
Or in overcrowded houses that a lot of people live, you know, and to this day live. But I would say now it's a little bit better, but years ago that was very, very, very big phenomena in UK. And same as Lithuanians living 20 in one house, same as Portuguese living 20 in one house, same as Bulgarian people living in 20 in one house, and it's just from everybody. But yes, mostly it would be Returning back to your question, it would be mostly the people who come to Northern Ireland to work and sort of trying to find a better life. Obviously, as well, there was projects for the Syrian refugees, for example. So that would be, again, different situation a little bit. But yeah, mainly would be the people who want to work and looking to work, you know. So it was very little of people who genuinely come and then maybe get into the situations where they cannot manage themselves. But there was people who were maybe drug addicts or something like that.
That kind of problem.
But I think anybody who were coming with a good intention to work and settle them, you know, to become like really settled migrants in there.
Okay. And how about, did you have any perception on, for example, the crime rates? Were they rising, or was the integration working properly, and so that you could say that maybe negligible, or?
You know, I can say from, I'm also a community interpreter, right? And I interpreted during one period of my life, and I still do interpret, but I interpret a lot in the courts. So I was interpreting essentially for Lithuanian nationals who committed crimes, and they at the moment are in the court. So my perception is, you know, that if I had a lot of work, it means there was a lot of crime committed by Lithuanians. Okay. And I know that a lot of, for example, Polish interpreters had a lot of work. Okay. So obviously there was a lot of crimes committed, you know, by as well Polish nationals.
What kind of crimes?
All sorts of crimes, from very, very bad crimes. So I don't want to even talk, but there were sad cases there. For example, Lithuanians killed a guy, a local guy, Irish guy from LGBT community, for example, right? Okay. So it's very bad crime, right? The ultimate crime.
Hate crime, ultimate crime.
To drunk driving, driving with no license, things like that, smaller offenses, a lot of domestic violence cases, if I could talk, you know, from my experience. But yes, it's normal, you know. I'm not saying that there is no one from local community who doing that, but definitely you can see that big part of those crimes are committed also for the migrant communities. And that is life, it's just a reality, you know, that what comes with immigration. Yes. I think so, you know.
But do you think that the situation was manageable, or at some point did it?
I think situation is always was manageable. You know, it's after all, you know, it's a society, it's a well-established police bodies and law bodies in the country. So I think there's always the measures, you know, to try to take to tackle those issues, I think. But you know, it's very hard to say at the moment how it is I think crime reduced maybe right now, or maybe people don't separate anymore so much that crime into migrant committed crime and local people committed crime.
Okay.
But in the beginning, you could feel very, very strongly, even myself, I could feel a lot of that if somebody done something, you know, and it was Lithuanian.
Okay.
And you would read a lot of, you know, Facebook comments. Oh, they all need to go home. You know, why they're here? You know, they just come to whatever, steal the jobs, benefits, and do crime. You know, you know, all that stuff. So it's like everywhere, you know. I think it's,
we can agree on that if migrants are there, it's because companies actually also need them.
Absolutely. The town we are, where we live, it's called Dungannon, and it has probably four major big factories, and I would really say 70-80% of all workers. So it's hundreds of people, probably thousands over, that are migrant workers, and also a lot of migrants working in other sectors. So I don't believe that, you know, it's just once that need is created, you can't, you know, to go back, sort of to recess back to where it was, and send everybody back, close the factories, and become little, you know, country.
Just turn back time.
You can't. That's how it works. If there was a need, there was obviously people who were coming. And
but it is interesting that you have witnessed that progression in the incoming of migrants, in this case in Ireland, and that you have lived through also, you had the perception of the increasing of crime rates, And now you are at this moment, you are on vacation in Milfont.
Yes.
And you are in a town where this was very much discussed throughout the year. There were several appearances on national television, mm-hmm. and on the major channels. You had journalists coming here and doing all this work and trying to document the reality, although I have a lot of criticism in what they did, what they have done, but nevertheless they've done it repeatedly. They put the spotlight on this area, and so people, even if they don't know Milfont, if they've seen it on TV, they have a bad opinion about
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to know from your experience of being here, because one of the major arguments is that, like, they will ruin our tourism business. So you are a tourist here.
Yes.
You are a woman.
Yes.
Yeah, you are tall, you have blue eyes, and
popular appearance.
And so, what is your experience on the streets going? I believe you are not escorted all the time. And
No, absolutely. I mean, it's actually a strange question, you know, for me. I don't know. It's actually, yes, very strange question, because I didn't really notice unless you tell me that there are migrants and I need to look, and then I sort of have to pay attention how many of them, and sort of I made that specific effort to notice that.
Okay.
Because I consider myself quite cosmopolitan person. I've been traveling a lot and I live in a country where there's loads of migrants, you know, from all the backgrounds. So I don't really see when I come, you know, to Milfont as that big difference, that shocking difference that I feel unsafe somehow. I don't know. I don't see nothing unsafe. I made a specific effort to notice what the people are doing.
Yes.
And I see them, you know, renting kayak the other day. I was renting and they were renting and they were
as well renting kayak.
Renting kayak and then going in the shops, buying their food and playing football there the other day at the beach with the friends, and drinking coffee sometimes. We drink coffee and they drink coffee, or using internet. So I personally, I don't know, I didn't experience any mm-hmm. any threats towards me,
mm-hmm.
Nothing at all. And I simply see people going on about their lives.
Yes.
Probably they're working somewhere, probably they come back. You know, of course, I want to anticipate people who saying, but you don't live here every single day.
Yeah.
And I really don't. But from the experience that I have, even being out in the evenings and... Yeah, I made specific...
No, but you are giving your perspective as a tourist, so
yeah.
we can...
I just see
can
people...
put that in advance and say, of course, it's the tourism that many claim that would be dead.
No, I would like to add here maybe that Villanova de Milfontes, right, has a lot of tourists, as I hear as well, from Germany, for example,
mm-hmm.
or from France.
Yes, or England or Holland.
Or England. And that's all the countries that exactly same, not noticing that, because they have exactly the same situation at home for many, many years.
Yes.
Or even if you consider people maybe from Lisbon coming here.
Yes.
And I know that Lisbon as well had the influx of the migration,
yeah.
probably late 70s, early 80s from ex-colonies,
yes,
right?
Yes, from ex-colonies, yes.
Exactly. So I don't think that it's so shocking for them that they, you know, mm-hmm. cannot believe what's going on. So I think it's more maybe issue for people here that they are simply very, you know, nothing saying bad or anything, is just normal, not so much used to them. So they can see the difference so much you know, clearer mm-hmm. of what it was and what it is.
Yes.
But the, as per se ruining tourism, I think that where the tourists essentially come, for them, it's, I don't see being such a big problem. Obviously, I can't talk for everybody. Maybe
yeah,
there
yeah.
is a tourist who
of
says,
course,
I'm not going to come.
And let me just interrupt you for a little bit and say that I'm not, or we are not intentionally trying to paint a pink picture, because... we are aware of the problems. We have problems in the services. People want mm-hmm. to go to the doctor. There are queues. People want to go to the finance or to the social security offices, and they
mm-hmm.
are full and queues are big. And we know that Maine, a lot of, it wasn't like that before the
yes.
migrant influx. and those problems. But in your view, what's the best way to answer to those problems in a way to appease people? I mean, considering your experience and the services that you've seen providing for immigrants.
Do you
think the same example could apply here?
I think, definitely. I think whenever you start looking into the whole issue from the very, very humane level, right? And you understand that we all people, right? We all want the same things. We want housing. We want to raise our children in a safe environment. Everybody, those migrants as well, believe me, if they have children, they don't want their children to be in a crime-ravaged situation.
Of course.
They love their children as much as you do, you know? And I think when you start looking into that from the very humane level, I think what you can do is also, it would need a project, a little bit more money maybe into the projects that would help that integration, you know, of mm-hmm. the people. That instead of maybe very much separating, you know, you from us, could help, you know, to everybody to come up a little bit closer. And that's, of course, it's not a process that can happen, you know, overnight or in next 2 months. Mm. It's really the process that takes years and years and years. And we know about the all different aspects of racism and all different things in United States, right? In United Kingdom, in the countries that have a lot of immigration. And it's not the, you know, issue that you can just come, you know, do something and it will be resolved. But I think if everyone will start looking from themselves and start maybe looking how I can help the problem rather mm-hmm. than to make it to be a part of that problem,
yes.
You know, I think it would help a lot. And people just a little bit wanting to, you know, come closer, understand maybe a little bit more.
Communication. Break the communication barrier.
Look at what's nice, you know. Of course, it's different culture, very different culture, right?
Yes.
But also different cultures are nice.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting,
it's
isn't
not
it?
Just because it's different that it's like hell or something.
Exactly,
or,
exactly. Yeah. And essentially, as I said, a lot of people, I believe there is people who are maybe not so good, you know, but I believe there is locals too, you know. And
yes, but it is what we, I mean, whenever you have a society, you have all kinds of things going on, and you can, I don't want to say there are bad people and there are good
yes.
people. There are bad and good situations going on when you have, because people throughout their lives change.
Okay, absolutely, you know. So I think, yes, obviously, I don't even want to say the problem is here already, because I don't want to even to call it a problem. You know, I don't feel comfortable calling it a problem.
Okay.
It's just a normal process that's been happening, I don't know, since the humans exist, right? The great migration and everything.
Yes.
I mean, it's been happening forever. So it's not a problem as such. But I think if we have situation like we have, obviously, in my opinion, government needs to step up, maybe to give an extra funding,
yes,
which as well normally create a lot of tensions again between the local people, why the
True,
money is not directed to local,
why they don't help the locals and helping the
exactly.
migrants and this
exactly
of,
but I want as well to anticipate, I want to say that exactly same words are in Lithuania, why government helping maybe Ukrainian refugees right now,
yes.
and not Lithuanian grannies,
yes,
right,
yes.
Same it's in UK, why migrants getting more support, why this house that housing just built is Lithuanian family living here when we have our families as well living there. So, but everything, you know, what's happening, yes, it's need from government a little bit more support, I think, and from the people at the same time a little bit more understanding that this is now a society.
Mm-hmm.
This situation is not going to go away.
No. Nope.
It's going to be here and to stay, and you will have to live with it. So I think what can you do, you know, the best is to look at the situation to see what you can do as a
mm-hmm.
person, talk to your children, you know, try to break that communication, try to look at that government support, all personal support from everybody, and I think you can go somewhere from there.
Actually, children, when they grow with other, for example, the sons and daughters of migrants, they don't even notice
exactly.
the difference.
Exactly.
In primary school, I can say that. I see by my children.
They don't see what the problem is.
They don't see what the problem is. Yeah.
Exactly. You know.
Just another child that they can play with, even if they don't speak the same language.
Yes, yes, because, you know.
Which is amazing. Sometimes when you remember calling someone childish negatively, think again. because children are on the good side on this matter, I think.
I agree with you.
Their
way
of thinking is actually the best. I don't want to, I know, promote people being naive. I know there are a lot of problems here, for example, with the organized crime. Mm-hmm. So where the migrants become victims.
Okay, yes.
Sometimes, many times, of other migrants as
well. Yes, of course.
That, you know, so they traffic people. They get a lot of, they pay a lot of money to come here, and then they become indebted, and you know, all the mm-hmm. sorts of problems that this brings. So one extra problem, in my opinion, that these people, the mm-hmm. ones that come to work and find better life for their families, it's hatred from local people.
It is, you know, the issue that you just told me about is as well very, very common. Where I live as well, in United Kingdom. Now a little bit less than when it was before, but before it was really bad. Like before, I'm talking even 15 years ago, 15 to 18 years ago, I have friends who were interpreters, and they used to constantly help people who were trafficked, you know, and then sort of freed by the police. And, you know, obviously migrants are very, very vulnerable group,
yes.
Women and men, because they are not in their country. They don't have that family support. They don't know the language. They don't know what rights do they have. You know, for them, it's very, very easy. I seen that myself. You know, I worked once on the case. That was through my interpreting job, but I worked on the case where was Lithuanian, already vulnerable young man was trafficked to UK to sell the drugs. And once he done something, they broke his legs and everything, and police sort
yes.
of take him, and he was sort of in a, like a hiding, you know, situation. And I was talking to him, sort of keeping him company and helping for him to communicate, you know, for his needs while he will be sent back to Lithuania. So, I mean, this is very, very, as well, it's very vulnerable situation, very vulnerable people. And of course that, you know, we're not going to solve it. That is all the police, organized crime
yes.
Units
yes,
that have to...
it's a police matter. So,
exactly.
The government has to be called into action.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What people can do as well to a little bit maybe try to understand that it's very vulnerable people. You know, they don't know language, they don't know their rights. They cannot even go and look for their rights. We feel strong, right? Whenever
yes.
we know the language, we say, okay, you cannot do that for me. I don't have to work 20 hours a day. But for them, it's not clear. For them, it's totally, if you told me, I don't know language, I don't know even very well where I am, I don't have documents. If somebody tells me, if you're gonna, you know, I don't know, tell anybody that I'm making you work 20 hours, I'm gonna beat you up and your family back home gonna suffer, you know, I'm gonna
yes,
stay quiet.
This is exactly the kind of threat that people
exactly
that we hear about people
exactly and yes. I think yeah. Here is very great if people like you, because I know you are very big advocate of workers' rights, of human
yes.
rights, you know,
yes.
And I think if people if you are somewhere where you're working and you see something like that happen,
mm-hmm.
I think that it's everybody's personal responsibility to try to help, to say it to somebody, not even yourself, you know, going into organized crime gang, you know, and
no.
But at least inform certain bodies, you know, that situation, maybe anonymously even, that situations are like that happening, because those people actually as well need help, you know, and they have nobody to notice them. So I think that is one more point to
my
consider.
Advice to migrants, because I know a lot of them speak English, and it's like, be patient, but unionize.
Great advice. Great advice.
Unionize it makes all the difference. I know that unions have been denigrated
mm-hmm.
throughout times. I don't know exactly where it comes from, but there is a trend in the increase of the negative
mm-hmm.
opinion about unions. Somehow they destroy
mm-hmm.
businesses, but this is not true. This is actually what we see if we analyze thoroughly and objectively. We see that it's workers' rights that have been going down.
Exactly.
And so more and more of this is prone to happen if
absolutely there is now, as you see, a lot of
when people
those
get together, it's much more easy to face this these problems.
Of course, and that's why, you know, I'm saying, if you see somebody, you know, when you work in a better position and you see somebody who maybe needs help them, talk to them, you mm-hmm. know, there might be, it may be worse, you know, it's something nice that you can do and something that it's really could change somebody's life. I think that is an important point that I would like people to take it from here.
Gintar, it's been a pleasure. I wanted to. This is the moment where I ask you mm-hmm. if you want to do any statement, say anything else, or bring up a subject that I might have not brought up. My English is mixed up now. Sometimes I forget to ask things, important things, but nevertheless, if you want to say something else or to add anything to the conversation.
I have to think about it, you know, but I think, yes, I want to wish a lot of luck, you know, for all the people in the region in finding all that common ground, you know, with other people, maybe trying to solve that problem. I know it's frustrating, I know it's hard, but you know, it's been happening absolutely everywhere, so take it as that, you know, remember that it's been happening everywhere. And I had myself a big pleasure to work with a lot of Portuguese migrants while I was working on the organization that I was talking about, and I worked with a lot of Portuguese migrants who were not speaking English. So I basically learned Portuguese, basic Portuguese, not from my husband, but because I needed to work with Portuguese people who were not speaking English and to help them. And I done really with my biggest pleasure. And I know what amazing people Portuguese people are, how good workers they are, you know, and just really, really heartfelt, amazing people. So I'm very, very pleased again to be in Vila Nova de Milfontes, to where I have now a lot of friends. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you for having me.
And you recommend Milfontes for vacation?
I recommend so much. Whoever watched me on Instagram, I've been for 2 weeks recommending every beach and every restaurant and everything what Vila Nova de Milfontes has to offer. So absolutely recommend to everybody. If you haven't been here, you really, really have to come.
I will post all your links from your
Thank
social
you so
networks
much.
On the description on the YouTube
Thank
video
you.
And also on the Facebook. But we will do that later on, because now we have an appointment. We have to go and get some sushi.
Right, yeah.
It's,
another place to recommend and check it out.
And thanks again.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a big pleasure.
Thank you. E obrigado. Para quem tenha paciência de ver isto em inglês.